Rich Kimble, Carrie Haskell, Bruce Pratt with us for Sports Lit 101. And we're pleased to welcome back to the program. He's been on a couple of times with us before, talking about his wonderful books, Waterman and Showdown at Shepherd's Bush. His new book is terrific. It's called Wheels of Courage, How Paralyzed Veterans from World War II Invented Wheelchair Sports, Fought for Disability Rights, and Inspired a Nation. David Davis joins us. David, thanks for coming back on with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'll tell you, you're right in my wheelhouse with this book because it's got it all. It's got sports, it's got history, and it's got some important societal change in here. What drew you to this subject?
Yeah, it's just what you said, all of those topics. I think all of us journalists and writers, we look for books with sort of multivaried themes and topics, and this one was just that. And frankly, I had never really known much about the origin of wheelchair sports or para sports, however you want to talk about it or phrase it. And so a lot of this was new for me, and that again is sort of that's always fun as for a journalist, you know, to enter and to research topics that you don't know a heck of a lot about, so that you really can dig deep and learn a lot yourself.
Yeah, David, one of the things that really amazed me about this book is that it really is a series of stories. I mean, as meticulously as you've researched it, these are very human stories. And I think that a lot of us probably don't understand how just one or two people can make an incredible difference in the progress of something like this. And so could you talk about some of those people, Gutman, Boers, the kind of people that made this possible?
Yeah, no, very good point. And certainly at the end of World War II, there was this sort of opportunity, meaning before World War II, if you were someone who was a paraplegic, honestly, there were no options for sports. There was no such thing as recreation. There really wasn't such a thing as rehabilitation. So you had a new generation of folks who embrace this new ideal and really aggressively. For those was a gentleman named Ernest, as you mentioned, Dr. Boers. He was in charge of one of the hospitals, one of the seven Veterans Administration hospitals that had a spinal cord injury, and his was out here in California in the San Fernando Valley. And he was in charge of the men at Birmingham Hospital, and they ended up becoming what's recognized as the first sort of official wheelchair basketball program. And Dr. Boers was interesting. I mean, he, like several others, was born in Europe and then came to America, fleeing totalitarian states. And what was interesting about Dr. Boers in particular was he essentially told the veterans, the paralyzed veterans, to organize themselves. He was a strong proponent of the patients themselves having rights and power, so to speak. And they formed something called the Paralyzed Veterans of America. It's a group and organization that still exists, and it's you know, a fabulous group of men who've, you know, taken their common denominator coming out of the war and organized both lobbying for disability rights and then also being a strong enough group that when they started playing wheelchair basketball, they would play the other teams. So that was one example. You mentioned another, Dr. Gutman. That would be Dr. Ludwig Gutman, and he was doing the same thing in England. And he was a German Jewish doctor who fled the Nazis, ended up in England at the Stoke Mandeville Hospital, which again was a spinal cord injury unit, and he encouraged his patients to take up recreation and archery, netball, that sort of thing, and he is now recognized as the godfather of the Paralympic Games.
I really enjoyed the story too of Timothy J. Nugent and the work he did.
Oh, sure. I mean, you really can't talk about the organization today, National Wheelchair Basketball Association and the annual tournament without talking about Timothy Nugent, who was based at the University of Illinois, first at Galesburg and then later at Urbana-Champaign. And Dr. Nugent was in charge of the students, the handicapped students who came, oftentimes using the GI Bill, you know, going back to school after World War II. And he looked around, saw what was happening at the VA hospitals, and he started wheelchair basketball at the University of Illinois, and they would play the veterans. And they became and still are a force in wheelchair sports at the collegiate level. And Dr. Nugent's contributions went beyond sports. He was instrumental in talking about architecture for those with handicaps and transportation in terms of kneeling buses, things like that. So a real modern forefronter in disability rights.
One of the things I think that a lot of us didn't know, I'm sure most of us who read the book didn't know, is how each one of these steps along the way in wheelchair basketball later provides opportunities. You talked about how ADA, architecture, and the like, but I think about Special Olympics. I think about people that were not paraplegic but were amputees, and how the technology, the chairs were changed, the rules were changed, and more people got to participate because of the Flying Wheels and the Rolling Devils and those early teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that speaks to before World War II, people with disability were basically invisible. They were shunted away in institutions or you know, they were in the family home and sort of whispered about. The anecdote that comes to mind is, you know, our president for all those years from 32 to 1945, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, was someone who had polio as a young man. When he was president for all those years, he, for the most part, refused to be photographed in a wheelchair. And that was really because of the stigma against disability. And I think what you see with these paralyzed vets from World War II is they're out playing basketball, you know, in Madison Square Garden and other arenas around the country, and they're proud of having survived. They're proud that, hey, they have a second chance at life, and they're going to make the most of it. And I think the media and even politicians and the public got behind that. And, yeah, that opened the door to others with disability, starting with, you mentioned amputees. That was definitely a part of it. Those with polio, you know, we had those epidemics in the late 40s and early 50s. And then that opened the door to eventually women and youth and, yeah, Special Olympics. In other words, those with intellectual disabilities. And, you know, that option of recreation and sports, you know, had never really been offered to that segment of the population before.
And there's a role that film plays in this, which I hadn't really thought of. You, there was the movie The Men with Marlon Brando, and a more famous movie than that, which helped change people's attitudes. Do you think it was Hollywood wanting to do this, or do you think it was Hollywood wanting to tell a story, or was it Hollywood advocating?
Probably a little of all of those. I think certainly with The Men, which is a movie starring Marlon Brando in his first leading role, you know, in the movies after he had become a big Broadway star. The Men was made in 1949, and it was filmed at the Birmingham VA hospital out in the San Fernando Valley. And I think with that, there was the proximity to Hollywood. Was certainly a factor. In other words, that hospital was, you know, was one of those ones where the Hollywood stars and starlets would visit, and there was a close connection there between Hollywood and even the directors and the producers would go visit to, you know, cheer up the men, so to speak. And so, you know, the producers who made The Men saw that spinal cord injury unit and went, oh my gosh, this is, you know, this is a great story, and this needs to be told. I think it, you know, it's not the greatest movie of all time, but it's certainly a significant movie now, looking back, in terms of showing disability, showing those who are recovering from war injuries, and that it's not so easy and, you know, Hollywood ending type things, that there's a lot of trauma that you have to deal with, you know, to keep going. And so that was an interesting movie for its time. It was ahead of its time, and yet it wasn't able to really fully maybe describe all of what was going on. That we sort of needed to wait till the Vietnam era for sort of more gritty and disturbing in some ways movies to come about.
Well, you mentioned Vietnam, Korea, places where there were MASH units and a much higher survival rate of the wounded and the like. How we know how this improved sports, but do you think that so many veterans who had been injured were in these hospitals, that the hospitals moved faster on learning about spinal cord injuries? Do you think the fact that there were these veterans that made us put more of an effort into that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's a famous quote by one of the doctors, you know, war is the most destructive invention of mankind, and yet it also I'm paraphrasing here, and yet it also leads to some of the most amazing innovations of mankind. And I think the destruction of World War II was epic in scale, whether you're talking about the European theater or the Pacific theater, on both sides, you know, allies, American, you know, German, Japanese, all of that. So there was a necessity to figure out this and to really sort of up their game in terms of the medical community. And they did. And, you know, they were helped by inventions like penicillin and sulfa drugs and things like that had never been used before, and now that they were available, saved multiple lives. And yes, you mentioned, you know, Korea, which only is, what, 5-7 years after the end of World War II, now you have MASH units, you have helicopter evacuations, things like that, which, again, enable us to save more lives. And the men and women who do survive, you know, are able to survive with even more debilitating injuries. So it's this interesting phenomenon, and that extends to Vietnam, and then of course to the present day, with, you know, unfortunately, that we're still, you know, involved in war, whether it's in the Middle East or Afghanistan, that sort of thing. So yeah, I think over the years that's what happens. The medical knowledge keeps building and building in, you know, upon itself. And the good news about that is that, it does save lives.
Well, in all the years we've been doing this, we've seen a lot of great books. And this certainly, to me, is one of the very best ones that we've talked about, because it is so, you learn, anybody that wants to learn something can learn something, but the stories alone are so compelling, and it's so engagingly well written that I really wanted to compliment you on that, and I really want to thank you for joining us. We don't usually spend 3 sessions on one book, but boy, we could spend 6 on this one. It's a remarkably good job.
Oh, that's incredibly kind of you. Thanks so much, Rich. Thanks, Bruce, and thanks for your patience with me on this. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, David. David Davis, the book is called Wheels of Courage, How Paralyzed Veterans from World War II Invented Wheelchair Sports, Fought for Disability Rights, and Inspired a Nation.